Hey folks, and welcome to this episode of The Grow Show. Now, The Grow Show is here to help you grow yourself, grow your business, and grow your community. And today's guest is the fantastic, the legendary Rob Cameron. And we are going to be talking about so much cool stuff to help you grow, not just business, yourself, your community, but actually link them all together through his experiences and journey. So Rob, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you very much, Gary, for inviting me to be on your show. And I'm very excited to be here and have a chat.
It's great. This conversation should have happened ages ago. So apologies for not getting back to you and vice versa.
Standing me up in a coffee in London.
Rob should have been part of season one. But he's in season two and this episode is going to kick off straight away from here. Now, I love this guy. So, Rob, for the people who don't know you, tell us a little bit about what you're doing at the moment before we go into your journey.
Okay, so at the moment, excuse me for looking out the window, it's nice to see you. At the moment, I've got two businesses. One is I run a furnished holiday let/service accommodation business, which pretty much through Airbnb and bookings.com tends to run itself.
Nice.
You know, we've got to do a bit of work like cleaning and changeovers, but the marketing side of things and all the general getting people into the places is done through online travel agents. So that's really good. And that's an interesting space to be in. Mm-hmm. But the thing that, you know, I really like doing and get fired up about is sort of personal coaching and helping people to overcome the blocks and obstacles that stop them from achieving what they want to achieve.
Lovely. And have you always been into this space, or did you get into it recently?
The coaching space.
Yeah.
Yeah. Coaching. Where am I now? Probably 13 years into my journey.
Oh, cool. So let's go back 13 years ago. Yeah. And to that kind of turning point of when you started to get introduced into the world of coaching. Yeah. What did it look like back then, and has it changed?
I mean, coaching back then for me was very much job related. Mm-hmm. If I can just share a bit of what I was doing. At the time, I was a product strategy manager in Jaguar Land Rover for what became Range Rover Evoque. And at the time, this new product, which had an L3 numbers product code, project code, was a what they were called a white space product. So it was a new product in the market chessboard. So mm-hmm. it wasn't a fairly standard SUV. It wasn't a luxury SUV like a Range Rover. It was something new and aspirational for people that hadn't previously bought into the brand, looking for conquests from the BMWs, Audis, Lexuses of the world. Mm-hmm. Try to bring people out of luxury sort of sports saloons. So it had to be something different. And at the time, we also wanted a much more female demographic, because Range Rover and Land Rover traditionally very male biased. People had already made it, and they wanted it to be aspirational. So people who were sort of starting to make some money in their careers, something that they'd want to buy. Now, the problem with that was that in sunny old Gaydon in South Warwickshire, had a group of probably predominantly male, 40-plus managers and all the rest of it are trying to design this world car for a demographic that they're not really connected with.
Okay,
Part of my development and part of trying to make that work, I was lucky enough to work with a lady called Beth Chadwick, who now works for Bentley, I believe. But she was a really sort of inspirational and innovative facilitator of meetings. And she said, really, to get out these people out of their space and get them thinking differently, you know, it'd be really useful if you went away and learned something about coaching and started to coach them through and get them to think differently. So I was lucky enough to be put on a advanced coaching program, which was accredited by the University of Portsmouth. So I went and did that. Range Rover Evoque speaks for itself. It was a huge success. So what we did worked. But I took what I learned on that coaching program and started applying to the teams that were working with me, so coaching them through things. Then I was, at the time, I was what was called a personal development rep. So I was a manager, so I would have had probably 30 or 40 people at the grades below me across an area of the business. And I was sort of there to help them with their career progression.
Okay.
I started to use coaching with them to help them on their career progression and blow my own trumpet. Had a tremendous success with getting people promoted and getting them the job moves they wanted. Mm-hmm. And then that sort of naturally then started to flow out and started working with people outside of business. So, friends and people that I'd talked to, and we just sort of started doing a bit of coaching with them. And that's where it all started.
Brilliant. So
it's been an ongoing journey.
I love journeys like this because we've taken that course. There was something that must have kind of ticked inside you, that must have kind of lit the fire. Because otherwise you wouldn't have been passionate about it, and your team below you wouldn't have started to see the results because they would have seen it through you. So I love kind of hearing people's journeys like that. So from the moment, so before you made the point of saying goodbye to Jaguar Land Rover and doing it yourself, was there a period of time then when you were kind of doing both at the same time? You said you've been working with friends and families.
Yeah, sure.
Can you remember that kind of tipping point? Because I think last time we spoke on a podcast, I was going through that exact same tipping point for me in my journey. So I just want to kind of put it full circle really with your story.
Quite an interesting journey because I actually set up my coaching business about 10 years ago, back in about 2010. About 2010. I developed that to a point where I was probably any one time I'd have, five to eight clients on my books, working with people outside the business. So I had my day job, JLR, whatever hours we were required there to do. Excuse me, I'm just going to plug my power into the laptop. and then, sort of evenings, weekends, I'd either be meeting people in person out, Audley Binswood, one of the most famous places in Edmonton.
It is.
Sort of cafes, wherever, or using technology such as Skype or Zoom now to do coaching with people.
Brilliant.
And it was really interesting to do it. But at the same time, it was very challenging in terms of time and try to get the balance in life.
And I'm alright in thinking, because this is how I felt during that time, you really wanted to push the coaching side for you, social media for me, but you felt compelled to stay with the day job because that was paying the bills.
Absolutely. And what I also found was that by putting so much pressure on the coaching business to get to a level where I could entertain leaving full-time employment, I actually stopped enjoying it as much, and it put a lot of pressure on me to be finding clients, to be doing more, and as I said, it was a difficult balance between working full-time and then coaching outside, and on top of that, if you're going to get more clients, then there's either a networking or some level of marketing you need to do, which adds more time. So at some level, for me personally, in terms of my own balance and my own sort of well-being, that became too much. But I also found that with the pressure of trying to do it, that perhaps I made some bad decisions in some of the clients I actually took on.
Weren't
necessarily the best fit for me and what I'm about, and the sort of relationship and rapport with the person.
Okay, because I think, to be fair, this is something that a lot of people tend to deal with themselves. And actually, it's quite nice to hear someone else go through it, because I've certainly experienced that. And I'm sure other people in service-based, kind of coaching or management kind of roles will see that as well. They take on clients which actually aren't the best fit for them. Have you got any kind of tips about that in terms of managing that, if you've, from your experiences?
Say from my own experience, and I can only say it's because it's my experience, that a lot of what I do as a coach and what a lot of coaches do is about building rapport and building a relationship with people. And a lot of it for me now would be listening to actually my intuition. And sort of, I believe, and not just a belief, I know from sort of areas of our brain that we tend to pick up on sort of almost subconscious cues from people and the sort of rapport you can build with people that some people, or you automatically get a feeling for that they're not necessarily the right person or not a person that you're going to get on with or you can build that rapport with. So my biggest thing would be, listen to your intuition. Feel that good feeling.
Love it. So let's talk about coaching for a little bit and the actual kind of the act of or the art of coaching, whatever you want to call it. What actually is coaching for the people who don't know?
Coaching, if you look at the world now, there's coaches for everything. There's marketing coaches, social media coaches.
Why I asked the question.
And I think for me, there's a point of definition. If you are in a place where you are more teaching somebody or you are using expertise you've gained and telling somebody what to do, you're either a teacher, a trainer, or a mentor. For me, coaching is less directive. So it's not about telling people what to do. It's about exploring with people, what they already know and developing that. It's about exploring with people what their blocks and issues are and helping them through questioning, through being curious, through... Occasionally, you have to get to a point where, if I get off, you give these three options, which one might you want to try or whatever. But, it's not about being so directive. It's about exploring with people through questioning, through curiosity, through exploration, to allow them to come up with their own solutions and to unlock their own potential.
Brilliant. So they're coming up with the inspiration. They're coming up with the ideas.
Yeah. Because ultimately, and it might be the case, for you, but ultimately, I think people tend to take more ownership and are more likely to act on something that they've come up with themselves than if you go and do that.
I completely agree. Yeah. And actually, they're normally brought into the idea a lot more if they've come up with it.
Yeah,
so exactly what you said. Yeah. But equally, for me, I don't know. I think people get hung up on terms quite a lot. Talking from my personal experience, a mentor definitely says lessons and come up with the ideas and strategies. Yeah. I get that. I identify personally more as a teacher than I do as a coach or a kind of mentor or anything like that, because I like people to get the ideas themselves, but actually that comes from a place where I know and I can give an example and I can work from there. But it's funny about terms, but you're right, coaches are left, right and centre. But when you're talking to someone and you come up with ideas or coming up and asking them questions, is there some kind of common threads or a typical kind of client that you tend to work with?
If you were to ask me about a typical client I tend to work with, strangely, I tend to work with a lot of female entrepreneurs.
Okay.
Yeah, and normally female entrepreneurs are in quite a creative space.
So, okay.
So it could be designers, could be authors, could be, but people who create tend to be people I tend to work with most.
Nice.
I don't know why that is, because, if you looked at my background, which is, two engineering / science degrees and an MBA, and I've been very science-based and mathematical-based all through education and my career, you'd suggest I'm probably not one of the best people to be working with creatives. But at the same level, I think I've got quite a creative streak and I'm quite a creative thinker. So that's probably where we get the rapport and the level. Yeah, I mean, if I was to think about probably my most successful client coaching relationships, they tend to be with female entrepreneurs who are in creative space. But
brilliant. And do they have kind of the similar issues or kind of barriers that you have to overcome, or I'm sure everyone's different, but is there some kind of common threats?
It's probably what I was thinking about while you were talking is that Tim Galway and John Whitmore, who became Sir John Whitmore, who wrote the original sort of seminal book, I think it was The Art of Coaching, I can't remember exactly, but Tim Galway wrote a book called The Inner Game of Tennis.
Okay.
Way back, I think it was back in the 70s. And they spoke about it's basically a formula, which is performance, P small e, is equal to potential, P small o, minus interference.
Okay.
So if you want to increase your performance, for me, there's two things you can do. You can increase your potential, so that's through development, through learning, through acquiring new skills, or you can remove the interferences. And one of the biggest things I tend to see, and I know from my own experience in some of the blocks I've come across, is it's not how much skill I've got or how much knowledge I've got, or, you know, since I did my advanced coaching course, I've done solution-focused thinking, I've gone all the way to become an NLP trainer, I've done neuroscience-based my mastery diploma. I've done lots of things to increase my potential.
Mm-hmm.
And my potential score has gone right up, and, you know, my performance has improved the result. But
yeah,
things that tend to block me or stop me, old patterns, habits, they're things I've picked up as a kid. Let me share one with you, because there's one particular example that's quite current with me, because we were at Now What Live last week, and Craig Petty was doing a thing with a Rubik's Cube.
Yes.
Now, I was there on the original wave of Rubik's Cubes in the late 70s, and I would have been 11 or 12 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was never one of these people that could actually complete a Rubik's Cube. Never got to the point where I actually ever got all six sides with the same colour. But I was able to get one side the same colour and get the, you know, the band of colours around the sides to be the same. And it was one day, this is how much of an impact it had on me. I remember vividly, I was stood in the sort of kitchen dining room at our house, and my dad was playing around with his Rubik's Cube. And he goes, oh, let me show you, Dad, I can do this. It took me a minute or two, but I got all the colours on one side right, and I went to give it him back, and he just looked at it and threw it away. And, you know, for me, there was a pattern that a bit later in life came up, that I was always a little bit resistant to showing people my skills, or, you know,
okay,
showing up and telling people about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And through some of the work I did while we're going through my NLP training, I think it was a process we call timeline. Someone, you know, I got to this point where, you know, I know I should be showing up more. I should be doing more, getting out there and showing people what I can do. But I've got this block. I've got this block. I just, you know, I don't really feel I can get out there and do it. And we did this timeline, and I traced it back to this particular incident, which was it was over in seconds, but, you know, a point in my life as an 11, 12 year old, where I'm just about hitting teenage years, I'm looking for acceptance, I'm looking to be, you know, looking for love and all the rest of it. This, you know, almost small rejection from my dad about showing him my skills became this pattern that I had in my head for, you know, the next 30 years.
Wow. And I can imagine that actually a lot of people, or majority of the people, have probably got another shared experience like that, but in their relationships or their history. Mm-hmm. Wow. And is that,
these are exactly the kind of things that tend to stop people. It might not be a specific example of something, you know, like not everybody's had the Rubik Cube example, but you know, it's something when, you know, they were younger, it was either they were smited, there was a passing comment, they were chastised for doing something, and at the time it doesn't seem a big deal, but because, you know, we've got a, you know, effectively, if you want to use McLean's three brain structure theory, we have a reptilian brain, or reptilian structures that are all about fight, flight, freeze, our physiological safety. We then have all of our mammalian structures, which are all about connection, our place in hierarchy, about being part of something bigger and where we sit within that. And then we've got our human structures, our what we would call mind, and our conceptual thinking brain, all the rest of it. But the first two are the ones that are very fast, very quick, and are all about protecting us. So one's about physiological and, you know, physical safety. The other's about emotional and connectedness and all the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what I got was, if I show off, all of a sudden I'm going to be sort of thrown out of my tribe and left.
Yeah. No, it makes complete sense.
The wolf in the tribe survives, the lone wolf dies. And it's, you know, a pattern that's unconscious, it's subconscious. And until you can dig down into it and find what that is, it's sort of sitting there and potentially stopping you from achieving what you want to achieve in life.
That's powerful. Yeah. So in how can people dig down and find that out?
Well, so, you know, through the exploration, through, you know, questioning, you know, sort of, you know, it, for that one, you know, that would have been a, you know, I've got this block and every time I want to, you know, and it could be, okay, so what's that like? You know, you sort of start opening and asking just open questions, really, you know, sort of open questions that have no particular context to them, and just allow people to come up with whatever's current for them or what their answers are. And then you just continue to explore that to the point where you start to get to the nub of what the issue is.
Wonderful. So just for people, you mentioned two kind of key things for me right there, and two kind of points of references. So how, if people wanted to find more about the three parts of the brain, do you say the
McLean.
How could people find more information about that?
There's an article, there's a blog on my website called the three-brained king.
Brilliant.
But if you search for triune, this T-R-I-U-N-E, triune brain theory, it will, yeah, there'll be a lot of articles on Google about
And you mentioned a kick-ass algorithm, well, equation before. Just repeat that for me again, because I think that was quite powerful.
Okay, so that was Tim Galway, and it's performance, P small e, is equal to potential, P O minus I, which is interference.
Brilliant. Now, I just wanted to kind of finish off this interview, because this is only part one of our kind of interview. I haven't told you that we're going to have a second part and a third part, but I want to discuss more different topics with you, if that's okay, in future episodes. Yeah, cool. So for now, if people wanted to find more information about, but certainly that blog, or check you out on social media, what links do they kind of put in and how can they find you?
Okay, so my rather outdated coaching website, which is due for some updates, is ignitioncoaching.co.uk.
Cool.
Okay. I'm Rob Cameron on Facebook. And if you're in Now What Live or Now What Club, you'll find me in Club 2 or at the Hub at the weekends.
Nice.
I don't tend to use Twitter or anything a lot these days, but there is an Ignition Coaching without the G. Instagram, Rob J. Cameron. So nice.
And I ask all of the guests that come on the show what their final thought would be. So this is their one takeaway point, their one golden nugget that we're going to close the show with. So Rob, what is your final thought?
Interesting one. I'll give you a bit of a metaphor.
Go for it.
And then it sort of relates to the equation I gave you. So you could have under your bonnet a 998 cubic centimetre engine, or you could have a 6-litre V12 supercharged engine. Right, but it doesn't matter which engine you've got or how much you press your pedal on the accelerator. If you've got your foot jammed on the brake, you're going nowhere. So until you get your foot off the brake, so start dealing with some of those things that are going to hold you back. Doesn't matter how much potential you've got, how much performance drive you've got, you're not going to achieve what you can achieve.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Thank you very much, Rob, for your time today. And let's catch up soon.
Thank you very much, Gary. Look forward to it, mate. See you soon.
Cheers.